Shalom, welcome to the Jewish Task Force, JTF. My name is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, complete recovery, for Sharon Katz, Shlomo Ben Avraham, and Dorit Bat Sara, and to elevating the souls of Simcha Bat Rachel, Pesach Zeb Ben Chava, Harav Meir Kahana, Yosef Ben Meir, Bari Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Robert Mittman, and Sipora Fegi Bat Liba. We have two subjects we want to discuss on the program this week. One is the true story in the struggle to liberate our brothers and sisters from the Soviet Union, a story that even many Soviet Jews don't know. They don't even know how they got out. They don't even know how they were saved. They don't know the real story. They don't know the true story of what happened. So we're going to discuss one incident that played a very big role in the liberation of our brothers and sisters from the Soviet Union. And the second subject that we want to discuss this week is Andrew Gillum, the socialist anti-Semite who was just nominated through his victory in the Democrat primary for governor of Florida, and the great danger that he poses if he becomes governor of Florida, God forbid, and the overall danger of the socialists, all these socialist Jew haters, these vicious enemies of Israel and enemies of America taking over the Democrat Party. But first, let's start off with the story of Soviet Jewry. Did you know that yesterday was a very important anniversary in Jewish history? Does anyone ever remember it? Does anyone ever teach about it or talk about it? Yesterday, September 2nd, was a very important anniversary. Because on September 2nd, 1986, a tear gas canister was released at Lincoln Center during a performance of the Soviet Moiseev Ballet. And as a result of that incident, that was probably the most important incident in the history of the struggle to free Soviet Jewry. Let's explain why. First of all, let's understand that before the Jewish Defense League, the JDL, of Moreinu v'Rabbeinu Harav Meir David Kahana Zecher Tzadik v'Kadosh Livracha Hashem Yikom Damo, of our blessed Rabbi Meir Kahana, before the JDL that Rabbi Kahana created started its campaign to free Soviet Jews, the issue did not exist. In the Western world, the issue did not exist. Nobody paid attention to it. It got no publicity. Everybody buried the issue. Nobody wanted to know about it. The American Jewish organizations were too busy with their left-wing causes, fighting for all these left-wing causes. They had demonstrations for abortion. They had demonstrations for black civil rights. They had demonstrations against the Vietnam War. They had demonstrations for every left-wing cause under the sun. But for their fellow Jews in the Soviet Union, nothing. From 1917 to 1963, there was not one demonstration to free Soviet Jews. 1917 is the year of the Bolshevik Revolution, when the doors closed and Soviet Jews were not allowed to leave the Soviet Union. They became prisoners. They were trapped in a prison where it was against the law. The Soviet Union, it was against the law to learn Hebrew. It was against the law to circumcise your child. It was against the law to practice Judaism. It was against the law to in any way be loyal to the Jewish people or express any commitment to the Jewish people. It was illegal. They would send you to Siberia. People were murdered. People were tortured to death. People were starved to death and frozen to death. Jews and rabbis and Talmudic scholars were murdered and tortured to death and sent to Siberian concentration camps. That is what the old Soviet Union was like. And so Jews, having no Jewish identity, no Jewish education, being torn away from their identity and their education by force of law, we're assimilating, we're intermarrying, we're leaving Judaism in massive numbers, and all the Jews in the Soviet Union were going to become goyim, they were going to leave. And that would have been the end of our brothers and sisters in the Soviet Union, chas v'chalila, God forbid. That was the fate that they faced. And American Jews, who could have done so much to help them over the years, did nothing. The same American Jews who turned the United States upside down so that black people could sit in the front of a bus. The same American Jews who gave their lives. Schwerner and Goodman were murdered by the Klan in Mississippi, fighting for the rights of blacks to vote in Mississippi. The same American Jews were willing to give their lives for anti-Semites, for enemies of their people, to fight for their so-called rights. Those same American Jews did nothing, didn't care, couldn't care less about the fate of their brothers and sisters who were being persecuted, murdered, and tortured behind the Iron Curtain. Couldn't care less. Did nothing. From 1917 to 1963, not one demonstration. In 1963, a group called Student Struggle for Soviet Jewry, which was not connected to any of the Jewish organizations, they held a peaceful demonstration outside the Soviet mission, and then they held in the 60s, during the 60s, they held some demonstrations, but that wasn't enough to get the Soviets to let the Jews out. The Soviets did not want to allow the Jews to leave, because the Jews were the brains of the Soviet Union. They were 1% of the population. The Jews were only 1% of the population in the Soviet Union. But they were 50% of the scientists, the engineers, the doctors, the professors. I mean, they were geniuses. And the Soviets, the Russians, who have a history of alcoholism, did you know 80% of Russian men drink an average of 5 bottles of vodka a week? 80% of Russian men drink an average of 5 bottles of vodka a week. A society like that obviously is not going to produce very much. But the Jews were the ones that produced. The Jews were the ones that were the driving force behind whatever progress Russia made. And the Russians did not want a Jewish brain drain. And so they did not under any circumstances want to allow the Jews out. And so something had to be done to free them, and nothing was being done. Just like during the Holocaust, when 6 million Jews were murdered, American Jews did nothing, even though the Holocaust could have been stopped. And that's something we've discussed on other programs. We could have stopped the Holocaust. We could have saved the 6 million Jews. It could have happened. But American Jews, the cowards, the self-hating assimilationist scum, intermarried scum, ass-kissing, assimilated, intermarried scum in Hollywood, in the news media, and on Wall Street, they did nothing. Nothing! And so 6 million Jews were murdered, and the Jews in the Soviet Union were being forcibly assimilated and destroyed in a spiritual Holocaust. And thousands of them, by the way, were physically murdered. Stalin murdered thousands of Jews physically as well. All of these terrible things happened. American Jews, who were so active, if it's Rwanda or if it's some cause involving enemies of the Jewish people, they're so active, they speak out, they'll turn the world upside down. All of a sudden, they're so concerned. When it comes to their own people, they couldn't give a damn. Finally, thank God, in 1969, our beloved leader, Rabbi Kahana, started the JDL campaign to free Soviet Jews. And by the way, no coincidence, in 1969, that was the first year that thousands of Jews got out. 3,000 Jews got out because of that. The same year that the JDL started its campaign, 3,000 Jews got out. And throughout the 1970s, after that, we had different periods where Jews were getting out, not getting out, in the 70s and 80s. But the mass numbers of Soviet Jews were not getting out. Tens of thousands were being freed, but we wanted them all out. And we were told that is completely unrealistic. I can't tell you how many times people from the UJA and the American Jewish Congress, the American Jewish Committee, and B'nai B'rith and the Anti-Defamation League, how many times they said to us, oh, you're so unrealistic. We got to work out an agreement with the Soviets where they allow 5,000, 10,000 to leave every year, but you can't expect them to leave, let them all out. That the Soviet Union is not a democracy. They're not going to do it. They're not going to let them all out. You can't expect that they're going to drain their economy like that and do that. It's never going to happen. That's what they told us. We were unrealistic. It was impossible, they told us. In any event, we led a campaign, including bombings. Yes, including bombings of Soviet diplomatic targets. And I was proud to be the national chairman of the JDL when that happened. And we led a campaign to make sure that the issue of Soviet Jewry could not be ignored anymore. Could not. It would be impossible to ignore that issue. And when you do bombings, people don't ignore you anymore. So we got massive attention for the issue. And on September 2nd, 1986, there was an incident that occurred that got more attention than any other and that caused more of a stir than any other in the history of the struggle. What happened? The Soviets announced that they were going to begin the Mosseyev Ballet, to bring the Mosseyev Ballet to New York and then on a tour of the United States. Why did the Soviets want to bring the ballet to the United States? Because they want to bring culture to the American people? Are you kidding me? The reason they want to bring the ballet to the United States is because people who see Soviet art and culture and performances, if they saw this, they would always leave saying, you know, they're so talented. They do such great ballet. They couldn't possibly be those be doing terrible things to the Soviet Jews. They couldn't possibly be these cruel monsters that are operating the Soviet gulag and torturing people to death. Couldn't possibly be people who have such beautiful ballet, who are so talented, who do such beautiful music. Couldn't possibly be true. That was the purpose, propaganda-wise. It was a the whole thing was a propaganda setup. And so we decided we're going to disrupt it. By the way, if during the Holocaust, when the Germans sent the Berlin Philharmonic here and sent their cultural events here, if people had done disruptions there, it could have had a big effect. But nobody did that. No, American Jews always wanted to be respectable. As Rabbi Kahana said, American Jew, when 6 million Jews were being murdered, American Jews wanted to be respectable. And they were respectable, respectably silent. And so Rabbi Kahana always said, we're going to bury respectability before respectability buries us. Time not to be respectable. It's time to do what you have to do to survive. And who cares if it's popular, unpopular, politically incorrect? You do what you have to do to survive. That's the only language the world understands. And so we were determined not to allow what happened in the Holocaust and not to allow what had happened the past 50 years in the Soviet Union to continue. We were going to change that. We were going to free our brothers and sisters. We were going to make sure everybody knew what was happening to our brothers and sisters in the Soviet Union. And by the way, most of the people participating in the demonstrations that I organized and the events that I organized were Sephardic Jews. Sephardic Jews fighting to free Russian Jews who were all Ashkenazim. That's just an interesting side note on how Rabbi Kahana taught us that we're all brothers and sisters and we're all one people and how every Jew has to love his fellow Jew and things like ethnic differences and where you're from and all these where you're from and all these other differences. Asinat chinam, needless hatred, and it's a sin, a terrible sin, to be part of that. In any event, and in those days, by the way, the Sephardic Ashkenazi divide was much greater in those days, much greater than it is today, because today a lot of Sephardic and Ashkenazi Jews in Israel have married each other. So many of the marriages in Israel today are between a Sephardi spouse and an Ashkenazi spouse. So, you know, the situation is changing, thank God. Baruch Hashem. But at that time, there was a tremendous divide between these communities. It was terrible what was going on. And the JDL ended that and taught Jews that we have to love our fellow Jews, all of our fellow Jews. In any event, on September 2nd, 1986, the Soviets announced the Moshe Ha'Bele. It was a huge event. Mayor Edwina Koch, Yimach Shma V'Zichro, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro. I don't know if he's male or female, or I don't know what today they would say he identifies as a woman. I don't know what he was a filthy animal. Anyway, he announced that they had tight security and he promised people nobody would disrupt it. The FBI was there. They all promised there'd be no disruptions, that everything was going to go smoothly. It didn't go smoothly. We got in with the tear gas canister. And we released the tear gas canister in the middle of the audience on the first night when the performance was first starting. And 4,000 people were in the audience. And they all had to leave. And they were all crying because of the tear gas. It was a military tear gas. It was a very strong type of tear gas. It was the type that's used in the U.S. military. But 50 Soviet diplomats and ballet performers and the leading so-called artists and dancers of the Soviet ballet, 50 of them refused to leave. The FBI was screaming, "You got to leave! This is a tear gas canister! You got to leave! Tear gas! You're going to be overcome by tear gas!" 50 of them refused to leave. Dozens of Soviet diplomats stayed and refused to leave when the tear gas was shooting up from the canister. Dozens of Soviet diplomats refused to leave, including the Soviet ambassador to the United Nations and the Soviet ambassador in Washington to the United States. Two Soviet ambassadors, the one to the UN and the one in Washington, the two most important Soviet diplomats in the world, in effect, because the Soviet relationship with the United States was their most important foreign policy challenge in the world. So those two were the most important diplomats that the Soviets had in the entire world. And those two Soviet ambassadors, together with dozens of other Soviet diplomats, refused to leave. They said, "We will not allow this. We will not allow the Zionist hooligans to disrupt our event. The Zionist terrorists from the JDL, we will not allow them to do this. We stay here. We no go anywhere. So, okay. So they stayed there. And they were all overcome by the tear gas. They passed out and they had to be taken to the hospital. 50 of them had to be taken to the hospital, injured by the tear gas. They stayed in the hospital overnight. And it was a tremendous diplomatic incident. You can imagine tear gas, being overcome by tear gas. Their diplomats, dozens of their diplomats, have to be taken to a hospital overnight. You can imagine what type of incident this was at the big opening of their Soviet ballet in Lincoln Center in New York City. This was, regular programming on New York City TV stations was interrupted because of this. They interrupted regular programming to go live to Lincoln Center. That's how big it was. They interrupted regular programming, including talk radio shows on the radio, to go live to Lincoln Center and report live from Lincoln Center. It was unbelievable what took place. Of course, it was front page news in the newspapers. This is before the age of the internet. So television was gigantic, and radio and newspapers. That was all in those days. Those were the means of communication. Before everybody got addicted to their smartphones and iPhones and all these other things. There you see everybody addicted. In those days, everybody was addicted to stupid programs on television. People are always addicted to something stupid. So, what happened? It became a giant incident. Everybody condemned us. The Soviet dictator, Mikhail Gorbachev, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, he held a special news conference to condemn us. President Reagan condemned us. And all the politicians and all the leaders and the Jewish organizations, did they go nuts condemning us? They were so upset that it's going to cause anti-Semitism. Oh, no. Holy no. Oh, what are we going to do? I mean, you know these Jewish leaders. And all with the Mike Bloomberg voice, you know, the Mike Bloomberg, Edwina Koch voice, you know. We must be respectable after all. We don't want people to say that we're wild people. And so they all condemned us hysterically. And the end result was everybody was condemning us. Everybody screaming and condemning us, all the leaders. And in the meantime, so whether we were popular or not, we didn't care about that. But all of them, as they condemned us, said, and this will only hurt the just cause of Soviet Jews. And we condemn this, you know, this is not going to reflect well on the cause of Soviet Jews, which is a just cause. It's true that the Soviet Jews are being oppressed. It's true that they don't let the Soviet Jews immigrate. It's true that this is a terrible situation, that the Soviets are anti-Semites and the terrible anti-Semitism that they're carrying out. It's true that Jews are held prisoner in Siberia for just practicing their faith and for just being Jewish or for just requesting the right to immigrate to Israel. All these terrible things the Soviets are doing, it's all true. And this just hurts that cause. That's what they were all saying in their statements. That's what everybody was saying. All the commentators. They didn't even realize that this was our goal. They were bringing the issue of Soviet Jewry and the justice of our cause to every American household. Everyone in the Western world was hearing over and over again about how Soviet Jews are persecuted, how this is such a burning issue, how terrible, how immoral, how cruel, how evil the Soviets are to the Jews. And the JDL is not helping matters by what they do. Who cares what they think of the JDL? Who cares what they think of me personally? I wasn't a politician. What do you think? I'm running for office and I'm a politician like the whores that run our Jewish organizations? The only thing I cared about was saving our brothers and sisters. And so they all condemned us. Who cares? The point is the issue of Soviet Jews became a huge burning issue because it was all over the news. You couldn't ignore it anymore. It became a huge issue as a result of the JDL. Only because of the JDL. Only because of the JDL. The Jewish establishment later, in reaction, the same Jewish establishment that never demonstrated for Soviet Jews, they wanted to show, well, we also protest because I was condemning them. I would go on TV and I would say, and you watched in cowardly, criminal, murderous silence while 6 million Jews are murdered. You did nothing and you have the blood of the 6 million on your hands and you're doing the same to Soviet Jews. And I condemn them by name, the Anti-Defamation League, B'nai B'rith, the UJA, American Jewish Congress, American Jewish Committee, Hadassah, and a National Council of Young Israel and the Orthodox Organization, Orthodox Union, all of you are criminals. You all do nothing while Jews are being murdered and persecuted. You did nothing during the Holocaust. You do nothing now. I condemn them on national TV in front of everybody. Because I said this in front of the Goyim. Woo! They went crazy. And so they announced that they're going to have a huge demonstration to show the proper way to protest. We didn't care as long as there was a big protest. That's what we wanted. We wanted more protests to help the Soviet Jews. We didn't care why or how or what their excuse was. We didn't care about any of that. As long as it helped save the Soviet Jews, that was all we cared about. And so they announced they're going to have a huge protest when Gorbachev comes to visit President Reagan in Washington. They're going to have a huge protest, a quarter of a million Jews came to that protest in Washington, D.C. A quarter of a million Jews were there protesting. What a difference between that and what happened during the Holocaust when nobody said anything. And so Soviet Jews were freed and did get out because the Soviets saw that they couldn't have good relations with the United States unless they opened the doors completely. We made it impossible for them to get out. We made it impossible for them to get out of their situation where they were persecuting people. And you know how they did it? The Soviets were saying, the Jews don't want to leave. This is all a lie. No, this is all a lie. They don't even want to leave. This is all a lie. And nobody would even have known about it. No, because nobody was raising the issue. Everybody would have ignored the whole situation. And they could have gotten away with it easily. And even after the fall of the Soviet Union, now, every Jew thinks, oh, well, the Soviet Union fell. That's why the Jews got out. Baloney! Baloney! Okay? The same communist bureaucrats that were in charge of the Soviet Union, that ran the visa offices for the Soviet Union, were the same people in their same positions even after the fall of the Soviet Union, even after you had Russia in the 1990s under Boris Yeltsin and these other leaders. They would have used, even after the fall of the Soviet Union, you needed a visa to leave the Soviet Union. You could not just leave. You had to have a visa. You had to have permission to leave. To this day, if you want to leave Russia, you've got to have a visa. You've got to have permission to leave. You can't just board a plane without anything, without any papers. They weren't going to give visas to the Jews, just as the Soviets didn't give visas to the Jews. And they were going to say, they were going to deny that any of this is happening. They were going to say, no Jews are required. Even when the Jews would come to request visas, the Russian officials, post-Soviet Russian officials, would have denied it and would have said, nobody's requesting any visas here. This is all a lie. This is all propaganda. The Jews don't want to leave. And nobody would have known about it because nobody would have done anything about it. Nobody would have cared. Nobody would have done anything about it, just like during the Holocaust. And just like during the first 50 years of the persecution of Soviet Jewry before we had a JDL. Nobody would have even known about it, or very few people would have even known about it, and it wouldn't have made a difference. So they would not have gotten out. To this day, they would still be trapped in Russia, and nobody would do a thing about it. But we made it impossible for them to continue that policy. And so over a million Jews went to Israel and were saved. Now, I personally, of course, as our viewers know, paid a very heavy price. I spent 5.5 years in prison under very difficult conditions. Maybe sometime we'll discuss that, what my prison term was like during the 5.5 years. And then I spent 12 years under different forms of waiting for trial or on probation or on parole or all types of situations, another 12 years. So 17 and a half years of my life were in some way tied down by the criminal justice system, either in prison and locked up, or outside, but under court, under a very strict and restrictive form of court supervision. Once that was all over, 1996, I applied to leave for Israel to make Aliyah. And of course, that's when Benjamin Netanyahu, the so-called right-wing prime minister, under his government, with a Shas interior minister, Eli Swisa, they threw me out. They said, I'm a terrorist. Why am I a terrorist? Because of what I did to save our brothers and sisters in the Soviet Union. They call that terrorism. But Arafat, they welcomed into Israel. And 80,000 armed PLO Nazi terrorists with the blood of thousands of Jews on their hands, they welcomed into Israel. That's the leaders of Israel. That's the leaders of the Jewish people. And that's why there was a Holocaust. The reason the situation for Soviet Jews ended on a happy note is because some Jews stood up and refused to go along with what everybody else was doing and took the right stand. That's the story of Soviet Jewry that nobody knows and that nobody hears about. Maybe someday somebody will decide to tell that true story, aside from just the little videos that we do and our little speaking out that we do here. Maybe someday somebody will decide to tell the true story of what really happened and of how people sacrificed their lives to save our brothers and sisters behind the Iron Curtain, and of how if we as a people became this type of people, willing to sacrifice, willing to do these things for our fellow Jews, can you imagine what Hashem, what God would do for us? Can you imagine what type of world this would be? If everybody did what Rabbi Kahana expects of the Jewish people, and everybody was filled with Ahavat Yisrael, with love of the Jewish people like this, if every Jew thought like this and behaved like this, oh boy, what a world. This would be paradise, and this would bring the final redemption. Let's move on now to the second story that we want to talk about. Andrew Gillum, a black socialist anti-Semite, won the Democrat primary for governor of Florida. Now, all the Democrat candidates are terrible. The whole Democrat Party is infested with Jew haters and sick people and self-hating Jews. Horrible, evil party. But the open socialists, the open radical left socialists, the ones who are openly declaring their hatred toward Israel, hatred toward the Jewish people, and their devotion to Marxism and socialism, they are gaining in momentum. Okay, Bernie Sanders and his wing of the party. Bernie Sanders, of course, it has to be a Jewish anti-Semite, a Judenrat Kapo like Bernie Sanders, Yimashmo v'zechro Shem Reshaim Yerkav. He's the one who has to lead this, of course. And he went around campaigning in the race for governor of Michigan. He campaigned for a Muslim who supports Hamas to be the governor of Michigan. He supported, of course, the person we're going to describe for you now, Andrew Gillum, who is a Farrakhan, Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, black socialist Jew hater in Florida. He campaigns for the worst Jew haters. The bigger the Jew hater, the more they're an enemy of the Jewish people, the more extreme left they are, the more Bernie Sanders likes them. You know, the whole Senate, 98 to 2, the Senate voted to condemn Iran's activities against Israel and what Iran was doing to Israel. 98-2. The Senate voted, 100 members of the Senate, 98-2. The only two senators who voted against it were the Jew hater Rand Paul. Okay, he and his father have always been Jew haters. And he claims it's for libertarian reasons. Baloney. Okay, his father's a Jew hater, he's a Jew hater. They can try to paper it over with whatever ideology they want. They're Jew haters. And they support Iran, and they support Russia, and they support the enemies of the United States. Okay? And Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders, the Jew. The Jew, the intermarried, assimilated, self-hating Jewish atheist, but the Jewish Senator Bernie Sanders, he voted against a resolution that over 90 Gentile senators supported. In other words, the Gentile senators are even supporting Israel on this, and he, the Jew, has to be against it because he says, no, we have to work with Iran, and we have to support Iran, and we have to make deals with Iran, and we can't in any way criticize Iran. I mean, he's like a servant of the Ayatollah. He's so filled with self-hatred. He's so anti-Israel. And so this subhuman, vile scum campaigned for a black socialist. And now that black socialist, a vicious anti-Semite, is the Democrat nominee for governor of Florida. And there's a chance that he could be elected, God forbid, governor of Florida. Now, I don't like the Republican candidate. The Republican candidate is an opportunist who ran around with the Trump. Now, by the way, Donald Trump is responsible for this. You didn't have this before Donald Trump became president. This, you did not have this wing, this virulent wing of the party, this cancerous virulent wing of the party taking over the whole party. You had the Bill Clintons and the Obamas, and they're all terrible people, no question about it. But people who openly advocate socialism and people who openly say that they're against Israel and against what they call the Israeli occupation of Palestine. I mean, these are people that speak like they're representatives of the PLO. They are taking over the Democrat Party now. This is all in reaction to Donald Trump because he's governed so in such a crazy, chaotic, and ineffective way. But anyway, let's put that aside for now. The Republican candidate, DeSantis, Ron DeSantis, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. He's a congressman It's actually DeSantis, by the way. He's not Hispanic. He's Italian. I think he's of Italian descent. But anyway, but we're going to support him against the black anti-Semite Bernie Sanders candidate for governor of Florida. And we have dozens of people in JTF. I know this from the mail that we get and from the communications. We get dozens of you live in Florida. We have dozens of our members live in Florida. Florida is one of our states where we have a lot of active people. We urge you to support and make sure to vote for the Republican candidate for governor of Florida. And to vote against, of course, Andrew Gillum, who would be a catastrophe. And you know, the real nightmare may be coming up in 2020. We're going to be discussing this a lot more in future programs, but in 2020 in the presidential race, because of Trump, the worst of the worst are rising to the top in the Democrat Party. You never had a situation like this where clowns that have no political experience could win nominations for president. Trump created the precedent. Now Democrats want to do the same thing. And so now you got Mike Bloomberg with his $50 billion fortune may run as a Democrat for president, and he, God forbid, could win. You have a self-hating Jew like that in the White House? We are kaput. I mean, that would be a catastrophe, God forbid. Catastrophe. And you have Mike Bloomberg, Bernie Sanders has a real chance of winning the nomination. According to the polls, by the way, Bernie Sanders is the front runner for the Democrat nomination in 2020. And the polls show that he leads. He's beating Trump by a double-digit margin. Most Americans say they're not going to vote for Trump for re-election. He's leading Trump by a double-digit margin. And I know all the idiotic Trumpsters are going to say, well, the polls were wrong the polls were wrong in 2016. They weren't. The polls showed in 2016, at the end, the last polls right before the election, showed that Hillary Clinton was ahead by 2 or 3 points. That's what the average of the polls were, that she had only a 2 or 3 point lead, and she did beat Trump by 2 or 3 points in the popular vote, because that's what the polls take, the popular vote. It was in the Electoral College that Trump won, with this crazy antiquated Electoral College. But in any event, it's really a bad situation. It's really a bad situation, and it's a nightmare scenario here, especially if we have a self-hating Jew becomes the Democrat nominee for president in 2020. We're in a lot of trouble. The mayor of Los Angeles is a self-hating Jew who's going to run. Tom Steyer, the Jewish billionaire, plans to run. Bloomberg, as we mentioned. Bernie Sanders, as we mentioned. And then you have candidates like Senator Kamala Harris of California, whose husband is a self-hating Jew. That's just as bad. I mean, he's going to be in the White House pushing all his self-hating dreck. I mean, he's another San Francisco, super rich San Francisco assimilated self-hating Jew. Catastrophe, just a catastrophe. So we got to get behind JTF and start working to wake people up. It's a dangerous, scary situation. Unless we're prepared to do what must be done to wake people up before it's too late. In Israel, we're working to do that. Thousands of people, Baruch Hashem, thousands of Israeli Jews are seeing our videos. We have a paid advertising campaign. Thousands of Israeli Jews are seeing our videos and are being exposed to our message. How much does, if they see, and by the way, what they're seeing is a 60 second or 90 second video. That's it. Approximately, some of them are a little bit less than 60 seconds, some of them are more, but say 60 to 90 seconds, something like that. How much does a quick video like that change someone who's been brainwashed their whole life? I don't know. I don't know how much it influences them. I don't know how much they remember after they see it. I know that from the reaction people are writing, a lot of people are writing, we agree with what this guy said. The guy is me. And they're writing, we agree with what this guy says on the video. Okay, so that's what a lot of them are writing on the videos. Most of them seem to be agreeing with the message that we're giving, which is a message of getting the Arabs out of Israel and getting the illegal aliens out of Israel from Africa and so on and so forth. Most of them seem to be agreeing with the message. The average Israeli, a lot of them agree with a lot of what we say. And I'm attacking Netanyahu and the Likud and I'm attacking them in the video, and a lot of them are saying, you know, this guy's right. So that's good, but the question is, will this really affect them? Or will it just affect them temporarily? Is it just a little blip in their lives because it's only a 60-second spot and then they go on and the next day they forgot that they ever saw it? I don't know. But it's the one shot we got this is the one shot we got to influence what's going on over there. Okay? So far with our new advertising, round of advertising, we got over 25,000 Israeli Jews have seen our videos with our new round of advertising so far. And we just started it a couple of weeks ago. So we're pushing and we're reaching people. And again, in Israel, over 25,000 people seeing something. Israel's only 6 million Jews. You know, it's something. It would be the equivalent of millions seeing, a couple of million seeing something in English in the United States. So we're doing what we can to wake the people of Israel up with a message that nobody else will give, with a truth that nobody else will tell. You can help. Join with us. Fight with us. If we fight together as a team, that's one thing we can learn from history, from the history of the JDL and from history of JTF. JTF, of course, is not doing the things JDL did because it's a different world and a different situation, and the things JDL did would not be effective today. Would actually, today it wouldn't be effective to do those things. And so JTF is a completely law-abiding organization. JTF does not do any of those things. But, nevertheless, the message of truth that we bring, the essential message of truth that the JDL also brought, this we've seen proven over and over again in history, that this is what must be done if we want to save the world from catastrophe. Join with us. If we fight together as a team, we can make this a better world. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach. Shalom.